Back in your life on this Wednesday, November 13th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani on a frigid Wednesday here in New York City. And I must say, my heart is cold as well, because right before I do this podcast, each and every week, I do Ariel and the Bad Guy. I've told you this before. But this week, I was without my partner. He was not there. He was nowhere to be found. In fact, I know exactly where he was. We did it this week, by the way, with Gilbert Melendez. You can see it Wednesday night on ESPN Plus, the platform that we built. But, you know, I thought, hey, I get to do this podcast every Wednesday. Since I can't get my CHLP fix on the show, why don't we go unfiltered, uncensored on the pod and reach out to him? He's currently in the Holy Land. He's currently in Israel right now, getting set to call Bellator this Friday from Tel Aviv. And he was kind enough to take some time out of his busy tourist days over there, doing a whole bunch of stuff, seeing a whole bunch of stuff, eating a whole bunch of stuff, and join me on the podcast this afternoon. So this is a lot of fun. CHLP, shalom. Are you there?
Ariel, I'm here, buddy. It's so funny that you mentioned it. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. I miss you as well. I got to tell you, though, in that introduction, you mentioned I'm eating well. The food here is so good, and not to mention, the place is underrated. This is a tourist attraction. It is not what the media tells you. Errol, I'm looking at the beach. I'm looking at the Mediterranean Sea. It is gorgeous.
I have been there several times. In fact, I spent my honeymoon there with my lovely wife back in 2008. That's the last time I was there. So everything that you're saying, I echo. I love Israel. I love visiting there. And not from a religious perspective. It's just a beautiful country. I want to actually talk to you a little bit about the experience thus far. When did you get there?
Okay, here's my problem. I don't know what day it is. Now, I say it as a joke to you. I do know what day it is. It's Wednesday. But my wife and I spent the first day wondering what day, because we left Portland on Saturday, but we got here on like Sunday or even Monday morning, and so everything screwed us up. But I've been here about 3 days.
Okay, and first time there?
First time.
You mentioned, you know, it's beautiful and all that, but early impressions. What do you think of actually being there?
Okay, so I'm not sure if you saw this. I don't know if you ever involved, but yesterday morning, back up to yesterday morning at 7 a.m., all of a sudden a national alarm starts going off through the city. We get instructions over a loudspeaker. We're rushed into a bomb shelter, which we're at a hotel that's essentially underneath the hotel. And it was it looked physically like a bank vault, like that huge door and everything else. You get all rushed inside. I ran into Hoist Gracie. Hoist and I meet up in the bomb shelter. And then there's a huge television, like, excuse me, the biggest TV I've ever seen, 100 inches or more. And it's just playing the news. And so it's showing these rockets being shot right outside.
Wow.
Nothing came near us. The defense system shut it down. But just to answer, I mean, it's quite serious stuff. I don't say that to really anything other than entertain you, but we had the full experience.
Okay, and like, were you worried? Were you scared?
Yeah, I think I was. Worried, no. Scared, yes. However, I must tell you, every time I turn on the news and they're talking about this beautiful place, they're only talking about things like that. So I thought, okay, you know, this is just a daily ritual. This is what you do. And then I talked to people. They said, no, we haven't had that happen in 3 years. Not where it was a national alert and we had to go into actual shelters. That was 3 years ago. So, yeah, it was a little bit concerning. But by the time I had that information, we were long out of there and the threat was gone.
Yeah, that is true, by the way. I mean, I followed the news over there relatively closely. And I was like, wow, I can't believe this week that Bellator is there. All you people are there. You're there for the first time. And this is happening. I reached out to Mike Kogan of Bellator just to make sure that everyone was okay, and he assured me everyone was okay. Do you feel okay now, a day or so later?
Yes. We didn't really feel much of a scare then. We really thought this was kind of, okay, this must just be the drill. You know, 7 a.m., this is what happens, because it was our first 7 a.m. here when it happened. And everybody seemed calm except for us visitor. You know, Hoist was a little worked up. I was a little bit worked up. My wife, but by the time we got out of there, everybody, it's just, you know, matter of fact, go on about your day, until later when we spoke to a gentleman. He was actually drove the cab, and he said, guys, it's been 3 years. He said it was quite scary for all of us. So that's when we realized, okay, there was some real red alert going on.
Tourist attraction wise, what's the most interesting thing you've seen so far?
Oh, for goodness sakes. It is so beautiful. I mean, I literally out my window, and I'm not like in some fancy place. I'm just in a regular hotel. Right out my window is the beach, which is then to the Mediterranean. We spent about an hour on that, Brittany and I did. And the sand is different, Ariel. It's not like a – I thought all sand was sand. It's not a gritty sand that gets stuck in your toes and stuck in your ear crevices. It's nothing like that. It's this really, really fine powder that just blows away with the wind. It is so nice. It is so clean. The people are fantastic. The streets are clean. The traffic is good. Nobody's honking your horn. Nobody's mad at anybody. It's give and take everywhere you go. The food is unbelievable, and I have to put an emphasis on bread, and then to tell you this, because I know you love it, hummus.
Oh.
I don't know how you can even come here, eat hummus, and then go back to the States and eat hummus. It's not even the same texture, let alone the same taste.
So the hummus there reminds me of how I feel about acai in Brazil versus acai here in America. It's a totally different food, and it is so authentic over there. It is so good. The food there is just absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm so happy that you brought that up without me even bringing it up. The bread, like the pita bread, the falafel. Have you had falafel?
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
The fries, everything like that, the meat. I mean, you can legitimately, and I know you like to eat as well, you can gain many, many pounds over there, but it's all just so good. Like, it's not like the kind of weight that you feel like, oh, you know, I feel guilty about this. No, you feel like it's God's food, right? Doesn't it feel amazing?
Yeah, oh, completely. And just so people can understand what we're talking about, hummus in America, by example, if I was to put my finger into the hummus and take a scoop and hold it up, it will stay on my finger for about 30 minutes. Over here, it would run right down. It's a soupy texture in comparison. It's not soupy, but in comparison to you know, the hummus that we have in the States, it's totally different. I like how you said it's a different food, because it really is. And that's fascinating. And I think the viewers will find that interesting too. But one thing about travel is food is so important to any culture, to any country. It's very unique to it. And to understand where you are, it's a very big thing to go and get a meal and try their preparations and their seasonings. And it's just done so right here. It's really, really an outstanding trip, I must say.
I am very jealous that you are experiencing this. And it's
great. You know what? And I don't think there's any reaction I could possibly want from a friend more than jealousy. I text Glenn that. And I said, you know, Glenn, I'm not really experiencing and sensing your jealousy. I need more. And he's like, okay, listen, I am really jealous and I'm happy you're there. It's like, you know, that's what I need. You know, I just feel like that's what friends say.
It's a magical place. I love it. I went there in the 9th grade. They took my class there for 2 months, one of the best trips of my life. I also went there in the 11th grade. They sent us to Poland to go visit the Auschwitz death camps and the concentration camps, a part of World War II, of course. And then we went the next week to Israel, and it was just a very spiritual and incredible experience. Now, Bellator has been there several times. It's your first time, clearly, as you just said, going with them. And I'm wondering if you have had a sense just how popular MMA is. I know Krav Maga comes from Israel. That's their martial art. But, like, is MMA and Bellator supremely popular in Israel right now?
You would be stunned.
Really?
You would be stunned. Oh, my goodness. These athletes can't go anywhere. Everybody knows who they are. The show's completely sold out. Everybody knows the show is sold out. Everybody wants tickets and is trying to be your friend and beg you for tickets. And all I wish is that I had a pocket full of tickets. I don't have one single ticket. I give everybody one. It is so big over here. There is such a buzz in spite of some of the heavier stuff you and I just discussed in this conversation. They are putting everything on hold to just be entertained tomorrow. And yes, it's been quite shocking, frankly. And I was told this. Mike Kogan brought this up. He said he came over here with Hoist Gracie. They did a meet and greet and a seminar years ago. They said there was mobs for Hoist, that everything was packed, everything was sold out, pictures everywhere. Errol, I thought he was exaggerating. He undertold the story. It is a very, very big deal. It starts at the airport. As soon as you get off the airport, the workers stop what they're – they come what they want. The people that are taking your passport, I mean, security checks, are making sure their bosses aren't looking at selfies. It's – MMA is very popular here.
I love it. That is great to hear. I hope to experience that one day. So it's a fun card this Friday. The headliner is Sergey Kharitonov against Linton Vassell. You've got names like Aviv Gozali, who's looked very good as of late, 3-0. Roger Huerta's on the card. Chaim Gozali, his dad. Austin Vanderfort, Mr. Van Zandt, if you will. So it's a nice card from top to bottom. And I'm wondering, are you doing the color analyst role for this one, or are you doing the desk?
No, I'll be the color. In fact, there is no desk for this. It'll be a three-man booth. Goldberg, Big John, myself. By the way, John McCarthy said to tell you hello. And
oh.
I said, I will relay that message. So here we are.
Was he saying hello and then trying to stab me in the back with the other arm?
You know what? No, it seemed very sincere.
Okay.
And he said nothing else to me. And I was looking him right in the eye. And I just said, I will make sure I tell him that.
That's nice of you.
And he said, please do. And, yeah, so take that how you will. It was open for interpretation when the message was delivered to me as well, but I took it as sincere, and I'm relaying the message. Hey, I got to tell you something. You mentioned the card. I have one piece of scoop for you.
Oh.
And I don't fully know what it means, but Roger Huerta,
yeah.
El Matador,
yeah.
We have been informed as a broadcast team to drop El Matador.
Oh.
Do not say that. And I said, well, what are we replacing it with? They said, no nickname.
Oh.
Okay. Now, guys do weird things in their career. I don't know if that even qualifies as a weird thing, but it means something. Whatever it means something, but he is no longer El Matador. He's nothing. He is Roger Huerta.
Wow.
So there you go.
And he's a fascinating guy in his own right. Like, for the longest time, he didn't have a home. He was training out of Thailand. He got this opportunity in Bellator kind of on a whim and asked for a one-fight deal to prove himself. Have you – so obviously you haven't had the opportunity to talk to him. Will you talk to him before? Will you ask him this question?
No, I won't. I want. I mean, I can't imagine unless we just cross each other. He stayed in the same hotel. I've seen every fighter except him. I have
oh,
not
wow.
ran into Roger. Yeah, I don't know what's going on or where he's hiding. Now, you'll remember, though, what a run he had. I mean, Danny White was even talking about him and building him as he was going to be the next challenger. I believe BJ Penn was the champion at the time, but Roger was the guy. Roger ended up running into Kenny Florian. Kenny beat him, and then Kenny got the chance, if I remember my facts right, and I'm pretty sure I do have that right. But, I mean, he was on quite a run, but he was such a handsome guy, and he was young, and they wanted him for modeling. He was like that time's Luke Rockhold. They wanted him
yeah.
for acting roles, and he kind of took his eye off of MMA, and he got lured into some other directions, and now he wants to come back, and he's had a very decent run, but it does make you wonder, where would the career have been if he would have stayed focused at the right time? How many wins would have he got? Because he's something special.
Yeah, first MMA fighter to ever appear on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Remember, he was dating Ariana Celeste, like the Octagon girl. He was the man. Everyone loved him. It was such a big deal that he was, you know, like the face of the UFC now. He was the pretty boy and all that. But then, as you mentioned, lost that fight. Then went to Bellator and things didn't really go his way. By the way, I'm curious. I hope I'm not putting you on the spot here, but which role do you like better? Do you like being a color analyst? And for those that don't understand what that means, like that's a Joe Rogan / Daniel Cormier spot where you're in the booth calling the action alongside a play-by-play guy. That would be a John Anik or a Mike Goldberg or a Mauro Ranallo. Or do you like the desk position next to, you know, Jay Glazer, Josh Thompson, etc.?
Okay, so I like the desk, but largely because of what you said, you're next to Jay Glazer. You know Jay very well. He's very fun to be around. He's fun to visit with. He's fun to work with. I will admit, I like to participate as highly as possible. And the booth gives you a lot more opportunity. I mean, you're calling every single fight. It can be 6 hours. And in the world of commentating live sport, that's kind of the pinnacle, to be able to call live sport. And I appreciate that. It makes the night fly by. It can be about 6 hours of calling fights, and it feels closer to 1 hour. It just does for whatever. You're right in the middle of it. You're feeling intense. You're cage side next to the referee. There's nobody closer to the action, and there's something special about that. But when you do sweeten the pot with Jay Glazer, yeah, I like to be with Jay.
Can I just say something? And I've said this to you privately, but I want to say publicly. I think that you are much better at the color analyst role than you think. I think there's a part of you that feels like you're not good at that job or whatever. I think that you're one of the best, and I would wish that you would do it more.
That's very sweet of you. Thank you, Errol. Can I tell you what's a hard job?
Okay.
And you'd be great at it, but you want to know what a hard job is? Running in the ring in between calling a fight and just doing the post-fight interview. The logistics of getting, you know, your ear getting unplugged, getting the cordless mic, getting in there, and then having a conversation with somebody who's fatigued, who's a little bit high on life because they just won and they're excited, they got adrenaline. I will tell you, the post-fight interview, and you would truly be the master, but that's a very hard thing to do.
I would love the opportunity to do that. I'm not trying to campaign for that. I just think the challenge is fun. I have so much respect for someone like John Anik, who does play only in MMA. Does the play-by-play guy go in there sometimes and do the post-fight interview or the post-game interview? Like, you'll never see that in football and basketball and any other sport. But the fact that he does play-by-play and then runs in there and then runs back to continue doing all that talking is truly impressive. Now, on Friday, are you doing that role?
So that hasn't been made clear to me. I believe that is Big John, and I believe that because they said something to him about an interpreter. You know, hey, should Sergey win? He's going to need an interpreter, John. We'll make sure that we have one there. They mentioned that. In the media, when they mentioned it, they mentioned and they said John's name, not mine, which was my clue that I'm not doing it. But I generally do it when I call fights.
Now, the other thing I'm curious about is one of the fighters on the main card, Austin Vanderford, is a teammate of yours. Does that put you in an awkward spot? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, a little bit. And the way I handle that, and give me some advice if I'm doing something wrong, the way I handle it, the moment he walks out, the first thing I say to the audience is, guys, please let me disclose. This is my teammate.
Okay.
I'm going to say what I see. I'm going to call this straight, but I'm human. I have a bias, so allow me to disclose the bias. And then I just go on from there, and I try to just say what I see.
Okay, yeah, I think that's the best way to go about it. So that's
is there
Friday.
Another way?
No.
I really don't know of another way, but I shouldn't hide the fact that I'm teammates with the guy. I mean, it's the MMA is a small world. I've got a team. I'm a participant. I mean, come on. I just tell the audience. Isn't that correct?
Well, no, it's not only is it correct, it's probably the easiest thing to do right off the bat. Here's where it gets tough, I would imagine, if he's not looking good, if he's not fighting well, if he's doing, you know, bad things in there, you know, when, I mean, from like a technical standpoint, that's when it's probably, because that's when you're supposed to be somewhat critical. Does that put you in an awkward spot?
Yeah, yeah, I would definitely concede to the awkwardness. Cormier just had to do this, if you'll recall, but yep. Deron Wynn fought. And Deron is not just Daniel's teammate. Daniel is Deron's mentor, which makes Deron one of Daniel's students. So now you have a coach-athlete situation, which is even more biased. A coach would sacrifice whatever it was for his athlete to win, and Daniel had to call that fight, and Deron did not look great, did not win. And I could sense and hear the struggles in Daniel's voice, but he pushed through like a pro. And, you know, you do the best you can. And I don't expect the audience to have any sadness for a commentator that has to do something like this. But in fairness, Errol, we're just people. We just happen to call fights. It looks like a really cool job, but it's kind of hard, and there's a lot of moving parts.
See, this is so much fun. I feel like we might as well be on the phone right now because I feel like we've had these conversations. Like, we're not actually doing anything of note here. Like, this isn't an interview. It's almost like an episode of Seinfeld where we're not really talking about anything, but I'm enjoying it so much because it's just very free and we don't get an opportunity to do this often. So I appreciate, especially you could be doing a lot more fun things over in Israel right now than talking to me. So I appreciate this. I do want to ask you about a few MMA related things if I can, because this is what we talked about on the show and I'm curious to get your thoughts. I know you've been busy. I know you've been traveling. You've been doing your thing over there, but did you happen to get any sort of chance to watch at least a portion of my interview with Nick Diaz? And if so, I'm dying to know what you thought of not only what he said, but just his general demeanor and how he said it.
Okay, so not only did I watch it, I've watched it twice, and I even made a YouTube video about your interview. Okay, so I got to tell you this. I had a little bit different interpretation than some, including George Masvidal. I'm not convinced, Ariel, that Nick ever challenged George Masvidal. I thought that Nick did a very good and sweet thing of defending his brother. To quote him, my baby brother. I thought that was very beautiful when he called him my baby brother. I thought he defended Nate. I thought he helped to build a rematch for Nate. I don't think that Nick inserted himself and called out George. And I had to listen a couple of times. Because the first time I thought, well, yeah, he did. And boy, would that ever be fun. But the second time, I'm not sure he did. I think he called out George for baby brother. Now, that's open for debate. I thought the overall demeanor was very good. I mean, don't forget Nick Diaz openly struggles with some social anxiety. He does not love to do interviews. He has a respect for you, so he gave you the interview. I thought he was very sweet in it. I've liked his laugh. At times he even giggled, which I thought was a fun side of him. He declared that he is the BMF, which I think most of us kind of go, well, yeah, you know, you're definitely one of them. And the other side of it, as much as I'm saying he didn't challenge George Masvidal, he did declare himself BMF, but George has a belt that says otherwise, and if you challenge a guy who's got the strap, if you say his strap should be your strap, I could see where George would take that as a challenge.
Do you have any interest in seeing him fighting again?
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding? Of course, particularly George Masvidal. Yes, I have a huge interest in seeing Nick Diaz fight with George Masvidal. I trust that Nick Diaz is staying in the gym and staying busy like his brother. I don't know that firsthand. I ran into Nick Diaz purely coincidentally right after the Nate fight. We were staying at the same hotel. I got in the elevator, and there's Nick.
Wow.
So I've got about 20 seconds to visit with him before the elevator shoots up and it's my floor. And Nick was not making an excuse. I have to offer that because as I tell you what Nick said to me, it's going to sound like an excuse, but it wasn't. It was just two guys privately talking, and he made a comment. He said, look, I don't have any problem with the way my brother fought. I do have a problem with the fact that he took the fight. He said, my brother just needs time. He needs time to prepare. He had 3 years off when he went in there fully prepared to take on former world champion Anthony Pettis. He had, you know, 40 days, 45 days, whatever it was, to then refocus and prepare for this. I didn't think he was fully prepared. I didn't like the date, and I don't think he should have taken the fight at this time. And that was it. So then when being armed with that private conversation and then watching you speak to him, I felt that it was an extension. I felt that that's kind of what he was saying to you is, hey, you didn't really see who the best guy was. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, have your opinion. I'm sharing what I believe Nick's opinion to be. Right, wrong, or indifferent, whatever the outcome was, I don't fully agree that that was my real brother in there. George was ready. George had a camp. He had Ben Askren. It was only a five-second fight. He was fighting. He went right back into fresh. He went right back into camp. That's not what happened with us, and I want to see it again. And I thought it was cool.
And
I
so,
thought you'd appreciate the story.
Yeah, no, I do, and that's exactly what he was saying. I mean, I know sometimes, and he sort of joked about this, people think he's crazy because he goes off on tangents, but even afterwards, his team, the people around him, wanted to make sure that the point was made that he does want to fight Jorge Masvidal in March or April. Because I asked him the same question. I'm like, I asked you, do you want to fight multiple times? And you kind of never answered the question. And they're like, no, we want to fight in the spring. We want to fight Cowboy Stadium, which may be a little far-fetched. And we want Masvidal. And we wouldn't be here, which I thought was most interesting. We wouldn't be here unless Nate gave us the green light. His blessing. We spoke to him before because we don't want to take his fight. Because remember, when they tried to do Nate versus GSP, what did Nate say? No, that's my brother's fight. And so I think they were cognizant of that. Now, a lot has been made of the way he spoke, of his demeanor. Did that give you any pause? Like, let's be honest. He doesn't sound the same. Do you feel like he's not in the right place to even pursue something like this?
Well, I will say this. I think that that's fair, and I think that that's reasonable. I think that whenever we're talking one Diaz, we then are often talking both Diazes. And if they showed us anything, and yes, it was Nate, but taking a few years off apparently doesn't hurt those guys. I share your sentiment on the demeanor. I think that's very fair and reasonable. But I also am taking into consideration what he said about his brother, not being prepared, not enough time. And now you're sharing with me that outside of the interview, his team said they want to do it in March. I think that date's relevant. I think that goes in line with what Nick is saying, that we take time, we prepare, we focus. And if they're picking a date of March, regardless of whether they get Cowboy Stadium or not, I think that it all is in line with at least his belief system, and you've made me more interested in the fight. I also like, if I may add, on a personal note, that he made it clear that Nate greenlit it, because that is relevant. If Nick was to try to step in and take a fight that his brother wants, and his brother has said, I want that rematch, there would be a little part that just didn't feel right. So I appreciate that clarity, and it sounds like everything's on board. I got to just tell you, Errol, in fairness, we were talking about disclosing a biasness towards my teammate Austin, who's fighting tomorrow. It's a little bit similar. Look, the Diazes have a very special place in my heart. I think a lot of people can relate to that. The rules of the sport don't fully follow and apply to these guys, and a lot of that they've earned because of their longevity in the sport. And I think if Nick wants to fight Masvidal, Masvidal deserves something good to happen to him. He is the BMF, officially. It's official. It's done. The title's been crowned, and it has to mean something. And if he wants Nick, I want him to have Nick.
Bigger fight for Masvidal, in your opinion, rematch against Nate or Nick Diaz?
Nick Diaz.
Why?
You know what? Simple economics. The law of supply and demand. The greatest law in all of economics says that if you don't have very much Nick and you can get a Nick one time, that's more valuable than Nate a third time. So I think that it's special. I think it's great. But I also think that you really can't redo that story. I mean, I'd have to go back to what? It was Tito Ortiz that fought Frank Shamrock, so then Big Brother Ken's going to step in and make things right. I just think that it's very interesting. I also think it's a good fight. I'm not sure it goes as easy for Nick as Nick may think that it does. George is Georgia's the real deal, and there's something to be said for momentum. But we don't have to get in the X's and O's. Just for fun right now, I think Nick would be the bigger fight. Don't forget, I'm not insulting Nate. Nate just sold out Madison Square Garden,
right.
Had the Rock in attendance. I mean, had the president in attendance. Like, I'm not slighting Nate, but don't you agree with me, McClellan? There would be something special if Big Brother stepped in to get redemption for Little Brother.
I'm not trying to make this into a bigger thing. I get chills when I think of the idea of Nick coming out of whatever you want to say the state of his career was. He never actually retired, but just coming out of his hiatus, if you will, to avenge his brother's loss, because as he told me many moons ago, he got into this to try to get his brother out of the situation that they were in. And now he comes back. He feels like he's been summoned, as he says, comes back to avenge that loss. I mean, that's a promoter's dream, right? You can't script that any better.
And Aaron, don't forget, we're resurrecting something that was very special that was the BMF title. Dana White said himself, look, I know there's a level of silliness to this. It's a one-off. Enjoy the night. Hate the night. But either way, it's one night. Don't tell me the belt's not on the line. George Masvidal will bring the belt. George Masvidal will put the belt on the line. And you and I and all of the fans know this is for the title. So, yeah, there's a lot on it. You use the word chills. Yeah. I'm feeling it too. Right now, as we're talking, I could look down. I've got goosebumps about it. The belt's on the line if it's Nick Diaz, period.
Okay, and last thing about this, and you know as much as I do. Like, I have no other information. I've just told you everything that I know. To the best of my knowledge, they haven't had any serious talks about it since it came out on Monday, all that stuff. But right now, do you think Nick ever fights again? What's your gut say?
Yeah, I think he does. In fact, I think he fights George Masvidal, and I think he probably fights him in March. And I don't know about the Dallas Stadium, and I don't even know that would be the best place for it. I think it should either be in California, it should be in Stockton, or it should be in Las Vegas. But yeah, I think he's going to fight George.
Oh my God, imagine they do it in Stockton.
I don't think you can go on Errol Hawani's show. I mean, don't forget, Errol, I know you think you're just a regular guy. You're the biggest voice in MMA. If he comes on your show and he says it, by schoolyard rules, he either does it or he loses. Mm. And I don't think Nick Diaz loses, not when it comes to a courage contest.
Wow. All right, so we'll see. And the idea of doing it in Stockton, they did one Elite XC event there back in the day. He fought Thomas Denny on that card, and what a great scene it was. I don't know if the arena is big enough, but that would be amazing to do that fight in Stockton. One last thing that I wanted to ask you before I let you go, because we actually talked about it on the show today. Can I get your thoughts on KSI, Logan Paul? Is this not so much on the fight itself, but just sort of the circus that it is and maybe what it could do for a sport like boxing and even for a sport like mixed martial arts? You're familiar with this story, right? The two YouTube guys boxing each other. Are you one of those old school purist guys that say this is a mockery? Like, I asked someone who's like an old school boxing guy yesterday about this, and he's like, I would not look at that. I would not sneeze at it. That was a mockery. That was a sham, all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, lighten up. There were some pros on the card. They got the rub. Billy Joe Saunders, other guys like that, they got the rub. They're matched up against each other, evenly matched. They're both, you know, pros making their pro debut. They fought once, amateur, against each other. Like, no harm, no foul. They didn't take anyone's spot. How do you feel about it?
Oh, listen, in hindsight, you can't say anything other than it did work. I mean, if you say anything else, you're being silly. Everybody's got an opinion, and everybody lies. Errol, numbers do not lie. They sold out press conferences. They sold out a weigh-in. They sold out the fight. So to act as though this didn't work, you know, Dana White is famous for always saying, people love fighting because they get it. It transcends all cultures. It transcends all language barriers. People just get it. He's right. That really is a simple statement by a brilliant man, but Errol, he's right. And if you take two stars and you put them in you'll remember celebrity boxing, what a big deal that was. That's basically what this was. But these guys took it very serious, and they went a lot of rounds, and they went a lot of minutes, and it took a lot of training. I understand the purists that say, oh, these aren't the greatest fighters. Guys that aren't the greatest fighters box all the time. They don't get the main event spot. They don't get the car named after them. They don't get to make the biggest purse. They box all the time. How can we say we don't like something for those reasons? And not for nothing, I think that KSI and Logan Paul deserve credit. Logan Paul worked very hard for this. Logan Paul trained very hard, and he's got some pretty good skills. And by the way, he came in second. So there was an athletic competition going on there. That's not true in hindsight. These guys did a good job.
And much like CM Punk, they didn't take anyone's spot. That's the part that people can't quite get over. Like, it's not like two other guys were supposed to headline that show and they took someone's spot. It's not like you're taking, you know, one of the 15 roster spots of the Cleveland Cavaliers and now you're depriving someone of an opportunity that put in the time work. No, the whole show was built around them. if it wasn't for them, there would be no show on that night at Staples Center. And those other guys wouldn't get paydays as well. So stop hating. One last quick one before I let you go. CM Punk, will he ever wrestle again? Did you see this news that he showed up yesterday? Is he going to wrestle again, or is he just going to be a TV guy?
Okay, I talked to CM Punk about 3 hours before he walked out and did that. He knows I'm a fan. He knows I'm a mark. He said nothing about it, so everybody kept the secret. I have to assume, Ariel, yes, come on. Why else would he walk out there? Look, if you can get past the barrier of getting to do the walkout, I mean, he's on Fox. He's like, everybody's there. I'd have to say the hard part is done. Now go have your fun and do the match. So I'm going to say yes.
Okay. TST, our producer, just told me I've said last question three times, so now I'll let you go for sure. This is just so much fun. I've had a blast doing this, Chael. I really appreciate it.
It is fun. I miss you. Thank you for including me, and enjoy the fight.
All right. Thank you very much. Chael P., live from the Holy Land, Israel. Shalom. Do you have any Israeli music for my read here, TST? What do you got? Anything? Anything at all?
Sorry. I was talking to Chael about hummus.
Oh, wow. I guess you told him that you made your own hummus, and you're very proud of it, and it's just like the real thing.
I did. I made some hummus. I made some almond butter yesterday.
Oh, wow. How riveting. Anyway, let me tell you about our good friends over at Behind the Bets. Doug Kazarian, he's the man. If you want to know about sports gambling, you want to know what's going on in that world, that's the guy. That's the podcast, Behind the Bets. Get it anywhere you get your podcasts. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, all those things and more. There's a lot to digest these days as far as sports gambling is concerned. And he's the man. He's the master. Now, there once was a time when I had questions about gambling, sports, particularly MMA gambling. I used to go to one man and one man only. But lately, we have not been in communication as much as I personally would like. And, you know, on this particular week, you know, coming off of Monday, Monday was a really big day for my show, my little baby. 11 years I've been doing this show, almost exactly 11 years, 11 years in June. And a show where you have The Rock. You know, his agent told me he had not done an interview like that in the 10 years that he's been working with him. He doesn't do podcasts. He doesn't do shows like that. He doesn't come on via Skype. He just doesn't do that sort of thing. I shot my shot, and I still can't believe he did it. Show where we had The Rock. We had Nick Diaz, first interview, 5 years. We had Rose Namajunas breaking her silence, had not talked since May, since she lost the belt. Stipe Miocic breaking his silence after the eye surgery, Tyron Woodley, Francis Ngannou, Damian Maia. I mean, it was one of those shows that I will never forget. And usually after shows like that, I'm able to talk about the show, digest the show with my longtime partner in crime, New York Rick. But lately, New York Rick has been elsewhere doing other things, nowhere to be found. And so I thought on this week of all weeks, I need him back. I need his perspective. I need to speak to him. I need that old tingly nostalgic feeling inside. And so I do believe joining us from our Bristol studios is the one and only, the often imitated, never duplicated, my old friend, the man who has left me for greener pastures, New York Rick.
What an introduction.
Wow.
You make it very hard. I was going to go with like a beg me, like a Conor McGregor, but you made it very hard with such a touching intro and a stroll back down memory lane.
I'm getting emotional just hearing your voice.
Stop it.
It's been a while.
It has been a while since we've done this in this capacity, since we've done a throwback debrief.
Where have you been? Breaking it down.
Where have I been? I've been...
So hard to book.
I've been in Bristol, Connecticut, running the ESPN MMA social media pages.
Oh, so there it is. Can we get some breaking news music here? This is it. This is the breaking of the fourth wall. Finally, almost 12 months after you started this job, you have finally admitted what you are doing now.
Now, I must pull back the curtain a little bit. We'll break kayfabe for a second here.
Please, please, please.
Last time, or maybe the time before that I was on this program, Ariel, previously the MMA reporters, now and improved Ariel Helwani's MMA show, you called me out. You called me out for not having updated my LinkedIn, my Facebook, my my Twitter bio, and the fans latched onto that. And subsequently, I have updated those things. You can find me on all those platforms, and you will see that I work at the Worldwide Leader. Doing ESPN MMA social media coverage.
There it is. TST. Breaking news. So you are the man among many to get this page off the ground. Back in January, the ESPN MMA Twitter Instagram and Facebook, right? There's three?
Yes, and we also have a Snapchat show as well.
That's right.
It would be important
who hosts
to know
that, one?
That there is a team of people,
yes,
including Ariel Helwani, who is the host of the People's MMA Show on Facebook, as
Thank
well
you.
As the MMA show on ESPN Snapchat channel. So
yes.
There is a lot going on the social media side of things. We hope you all follow along.
Now, I have to say, and I hope this doesn't come across as condescending or anything, I'm being 100% honest, I am very proud of you. I'm very proud of what you've done. I'm very proud of the team that you have there. I think your partner in crime, Tessa, is phenomenal. You know, you guys don't get the shine a lot because you're behind the scenes, and that's probably the way it should be. But you deserve the shine because what you've done, you almost have 500,000 followers on Instagram, crushing it on Twitter and Facebook as well, over 100,000 on Twitter last I checked, I think 120 or something like that. You guys are doing amazing work, and you're doing, you know, let me quickly break the fourth wall here as well. You know, when I left MMA Fighting and I went to ESPN, there was no guarantee that you'd be able to come with me. We kind of wedged our way through the door there on that first show, and there were no guarantees, and you showed up and you helped out just as a friend. And you told me that you wanted to create like the social media page for mixed martial arts. You had a vision, and there was no real lane to go down. There was no opportunity. There was nothing available. There was nothing on the table. But once the door was slightly open, you went in there. You told them your vision. They gave you the ball. And, you know, I hope that you are being showered with praise because you guys are killing it. I mean, what you guys are doing as far as that page is concerned, every time – I've told you this. Every time I am watching an event, you tell the full story from beginning to end, behind the scenes, the arrivals, the fights themselves, the aftermath. You have laid the blueprint as to how to run a page like this. So you, Tessa, and everyone are killing it. Jason, Nolan, the whole team over there are doing incredible work. And I'm proud of you. Like, I sit back and I just sometimes just admire what you guys do and how quickly you do it and the accuracy and the right stories, the right angles. It's amazing. It's really great to see. So congratulations.
You're going to make me very emotional. I
Good.
Don't even know what to do at this moment. Like, I just want to just take this segment, you know, download it and keep it and listen to it on repeat. But I do appreciate the kind words. And yes, it is a team effort. It is not me doing this alone. The social media team is fantastic, as is the rest of ESPN social media team who supports those accounts as well.
Yes. But here's the thing. Fantastic. When you reached out in 2011, you were just some schmo. And like, to see how far you've come and, you know, just doing the show, you had no idea what to do on that show back in the day and everything. No, it's true. And then to be here doing this with the keys to the car and, you know, people should recognize that. People should know that. And it's about time that we could talk about it. I don't know why it took you so damn long to actually speak about it, but that's, you know, your
I'm
business.
Shy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, people were wondering. People thought that I was boxing you out. People thought that I wasn't, you know, bring you along for the ride. But no, I brought you along for the ride and then you freaking passed me on the highway and now you're doing your own thing and killing it. So it's amazing. Like, I, you know, when I tried to campaign for you to come over, it wasn't to do this. I just wanted your help on the show. I wanted to continue what we were doing. And then you freaking passed. And I'm not saying this, I'm not mad about it. I'm so happy about it. Like, I'm legitimately ecstatic to see how good you guys are doing on this page because this, who knows? It could have bombed. You could have had 50,000 followers by now and there would have been egg on my face for bringing you. But no, you're in those meetings and you're asking all the great questions. I mean, you're just great. I feel like I'm watching my, you know, my son make it. So it's a great feeling.
Are you crying?
Yes, I am crying. I'm happy this isn't on camera. So it's great. All right. So enough about our little, mutual admiration society here. I want to get it.
Just before we move on, don't forget me when you go to.
Oh, that's the plan.
NBA coverage. Just make sure that I'm along for that ride as well.
No. That's 100% the plan. I'm forgetting everyone. I'm forgetting this whole thing, this whole operation, including TST, who, sometimes gets on my nerves. But anyway, we'll hear from him in a bit. We've got a fun thing planned, actually, for later in the show, so stay tuned for that. Okay, a couple things I want to ask you about. First of all, your guy Jacare, back in the day, you were the one. You were the one talking about the former Strikeforce middleweight champion putting out the stupid emoji, all that stuff. That emoji doesn't get as much play as it did just a couple of years ago. Now he's trying to do what Rockhold and Weidman were unsuccessful in doing this year, which is move up from 185 and reinvent themselves at 205. And it's funny that he's fighting Jan Blachowicz, who knocked out Luke Rockhold back in July. Does he have what it takes? After that performance against Jack Hermanson, do you have high hopes for this run at 205, or do you think it will end up much like Rockhold's attempt and Weidman's attempt?
Yeah, I don't know if it will end up like Rockhold and Weidman's attempt. I do think Jacare will be better suited for the division. And I do think in the Hermanson fight, he showed that he still has the skills to compete at that highest level, because I do think Jack Hermanson is up there in the middleweight division. I don't think that loss to Hermanson is by any means a declaration that Jacare has done in MMA. But he is advanced in age, and these moves up a division when you're older, I think tend to work better in boxing as you're carrying that power up the division. I don't think that you have the same carryover when it comes to MMA. I don't think we're going to see the same success. And, you know, you pointed to Weidman and Rockhold as examples of recent failures, to be honest. I don't know if Jacare is going to be a contender at 205. I think he'll be in some fun fights. I think this fight coming up is going to be a great fight. I think Jacare's going to give a good account of himself, but I don't think he'll be a future champion in this division. And unfortunately, he never quite made it into that title fight at middleweight, which is a real shame for what is probably one of the best fighters in UFC history to have never fought for a title.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the best fighters to never win the belt, but you're right. He never actually fought for the UFC championship, which is amazing and somewhat sad. And I agree with you. I actually feel like, correct me if you feel otherwise, I feel like if he doesn't win this fight, he's done.
Yeah, and in, you know, interviews that you've had with him, he's spoken very candidly about the idea of walking away. Like, he does not seem like somebody who's hanging on for the sake of hanging on. He is somebody who's still motivated to fight and wants to compete, but I don't think he has that same drive pushing him forward as he did early on in his career. And if he's, you know, in a position where he doesn't feel like he has it anymore, I think he'll walk away gladly. And he said as much to you. So I would say, yeah, you're right there. If this is a stumble, I don't know if he sticks around at 205.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Actually, there's a part of me that's a little bit surprised. Like, I think the only reason why he's doing this is because he knows he's not going to get a title shot at 185 anytime soon. And so he feels like, all right, my best chance is just to go 205. Maybe I win this fight and I could, you know, try to somehow backdoor my way into this title picture with John Jones, who doesn't seem all that enamored with the options out there.
Yeah.
And if he stumbles, if he loses this fight, I think this could be the end. And I haven't talked to him leading up to this fight, but I don't think his feelings have changed since when I spoke to him before the Hermanson fight. Now, by the way, speaking of John Jones, if you had the pencil, if you were the guy writing the fights, right, the book, if you will, as Paul Heyman once told me, you do Jones-Reyes, Jones-Anderson, Jones-someone else.
I'm not particularly motivated by any of them or excited, I would say, by any of them. I do think at this point Corey Anderson has done enough and done it for enough years that I think he's probably the most deserving of the opportunity.
Wow. I'm shocked by that.
Yeah, I mean,
not Reyes? Undefeated?
Yeah, yes, but the level I'm impressed by Reyes's run, but the level of competition that Corey Anderson has faced in this division for so long, and to be able to sustain his position on top and then come into a fight against a guy like Johnny Walker, who was supposed to, you know, steamroll him and the young lion was supposed to eat the old lion and completely obliterate him. I do think there is something to be said for Corey Anderson's longevity, his resume, the things he's done in that division, the number of top contenders he's beaten. Now, certainly he's not on the same streak as Dominic Reyes, but the level of competition that Dominic Reyes has faced to this point hasn't been overwhelmingly powerful. Like, I'm not looking at Dominic Reyes's resume and saying that's the next guy to beat John Jones. But quite frankly, I'm not looking at any guy as the next guy to beat John Jones, at least nobody in the division currently. So to me, it's a toss up between Reyes and Anderson. Not particularly fond of either option. I think, you know, it's a tough sell for either of those guys to be in a fight with John Jones and to be a reasonable winner. But I would go Corey Anderson because of longevity, because of the resume that he's been able to put together.
But don't you think just the fact that he's this, like, undefeated guy, rising star, like, isn't that enough? Don't
you think enough for you? Do you care?
Yeah.
About seeing Dominic Reyes versus John Jones?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be upset with either. I've been campaigning for Corey to get more love for a while now. Chael was always putting him down, and I think the win over Johnny Walker was notable. But the fact that he's undefeated, I think name-wise, they're kind of a wash. I don't think one is more popular or more famous than the other. And Dominic did just main event the show, so maybe he gets the edge there. But the fact that he's undefeated and Jones could say, okay, I'm the first guy to beat this guy, that probably gives him, at least in my opinion, the nod.
Yeah, and I can understand that argument. I also think that John Jones isn't going to be stressing either of those opponents. And I don't think he's particularly interested in either of those opponents.
No, that's
just
the problem.
Based on the idea of how many other fights he's been tossing out. Definitely trying to angle for an Israel Adesanya fight. Definitely mentioning Stipe more than anybody should be mentioning Stipe. So it's a tough call to say who should be next for John Jones, because I don't think he wants either of them, not because quote unquote, as MMA fans would say, he's scared, but because he's not interested and he can't get motivated to fight them. But for me, it would be Corey Anderson. I'd just be more interested in seeing it. And to be honest, you're probably right from the sense that Dominic Reyes is not going to be undefeated forever. So you probably want to give him the John Jones fight before he loses to somebody else. But I don't know if that one's getting me out of bed.
But you know what? That's where it gets really interesting. The fact that he's not all that motivated, and the fact that Dominic is tough, like he's not a household name and he's not one of the more, you know, popular fighters in the UFC, doesn't talk a lot of trash, that could be a recipe for an upset.
If that's the selling point of the fight is John Jones is probably taking this lightly, that's a bad sell.
I'm not saying anyone's going to come out and actually sell it that way, but it is somewhat reminiscent of the Gustafsson fight, the first one.
Acknowledging that is extremely important, but my point is, if that is the number one factor, if that's the thing that we're pointing to as like this is his best shot, that's a tough sell. That's a really tough sell. No, certainly that won't be on the poster. That won't be on the marketing material. See how little John Jones cares about this fight. But I do think if that's the thing that we're all pointing to as the reason why Dominic Reyes may be able to get this done, it says A, a lot of great things about John Jones, and B, a lot of bad things about that division.
Yeah, or do you want to just see him go up to heavyweight?
I would love to see him go up to heavyweight, but I don't think there's fights there that make sense at the moment.
You don't really like my Francis idea? Too crazy?
No, that seems like too big of a step up in terms of jumping up to heavyweight. I'd like to see John Jones, you know, follow a similar path to an Anderson Silva, maybe you know, a Forrest Griffin or did he fight James Irvin at light heavyweight? Yeah, I'd like to see that level, that caliber of competition before he's jumping right into title contender or champion. I definitely want to see Stipe and Cormier resolve their trilogy before I want to see John Jones kind of jump right into the heavyweight title mix.
Okay, let me ask you. I did a thing on ESPN.com today where I did like a little State of the Union, because there's three title fights happening on December 14th, but then not a single other champion is booked.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting time. So I spoke to Stipe on Monday, as you know, and he is downplaying the DC trilogy fight. And I think he's trying to, you know, give him a taste of his own medicine, which is essentially to say, like, he feels like DC was avoiding him, avoiding the rematch and going after the Brock fight. But again, as I've said on this show before and other shows, I think that's somewhat flawed because A, DC had back surgery. He didn't make it all that public. And B, it was the UFC that was trying to make that Brock fight. It wasn't necessarily DC. They put it out there first. And then, of course, he campaigned for it. But the moment that fight wasn't a reality anymore, he was on board with the Stipe fight. But anyway, it does seem like he's trying to, you know, turn the tables on him. And now he's campaigning for a Tyson Fury fight. How do you feel about that?
Don't know how to feel about it. Don't know what, you know, Tyson Fury, what we've seen of Tyson Fury in terms of MMA to this point has been sparring footage with Darren Till. So
right.
Until there's something more solid to chew on with Tyson Fury, until I'm not convinced that his...
How do you feel about him just using, like saying, I want Tyson Fury? Like the heavyweight champion, there's a fight out there, right? A trilogy fight, which would do big business in my opinion. Retirement fight, they're 1-1. This idea that he beat him decisively, I don't think really vibes, because DC was winning the early portions of that fight. And instead he's like, yeah, I want to fight the heavyweight champion in either boxing or MMA. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it feels like what you've been pointing to, that he's trying to gain some leverage and kind of, you know, turn the tables on DC. But you astutely pointed out, you know, DC was chasing the Brock Lesnar fight when it seemed like it was a reality. As soon as it wasn't, DC signed up for the rematch with Stipe. So I don't think that the Tyson Fury fight is as real as Brock ever was. So I'm not particularly interested. Don't think that is something that will happen anytime soon. It's time to make Stipe and Cormier 3.
So that's the one you want.
I wouldn't mind Francis fighting for a title, but it doesn't seem like that's the direction they're going. They could have, you know, started working toward that a long time ago. Francis has been itching to fight and ready. Now, granted, Stipe's been dealing with an eye issue, but they could have been putting the plans in place for that, and it doesn't seem like those plans are in place. So I'd be open to Francis getting a shot. I'd be open to Cormier getting that trilogy fight, but I think Stipe's next fight is going to be an MMA fighter and not a boxer.
let DC have that retirement fight. It's very rare to have a retirement title fight, right? That never happens. It's very, very rare, and it's deserving. It's not like it's a, you know, like a, you know, a charity thing, a token thing. No, this is deserving. There's a history. They're 1-1. I mean, again, it makes too much sense, in my opinion. It's a perfect fight, perfect scenario. Down the line, look, and also Tyson Fury has 3 fights left on his boxing contract, and he's got the Deontay Wilder fight if Wilder gets by Luis Ortiz. In the next couple of weeks, then he can, you know, focus that, you know, they're trying to do it in February, and then there's 2 more after that. So I can't see it happening. Maybe crazier things have happened. I mean, we certainly all said the same thing about Mayweather-McGregor, but right now, heavyweight champ, there's a fight there that's big. It's not, you know, it's not like the Dominic Reyes situation where it's not a sexy opponent. No, a lot of people want to see this. In fact, we did a poll on Monday, and it was DC, Francis, John Jones, Tyson Fury, and DC won. By a pretty big margin. And well, so I feel like the fans want it as well.
Yeah, and you know, on your show, Stipe said he beat DC decisively, which I would say is true. You know,
No, listen. End was decisive.
The end was decisive. Okay. The knockout was certain. And look, and you, you know, paid great tribute to it on fight night, the way that Stipe and his team were able to switch the game plan up and start working the body and getting that knockout was a part of attrition. They were working toward that and they were earning that. So certainly it is fair to say that that was decisive. This was not, you know, a fluke knockout. He was able to put a game plan together in the later rounds that earned him that win. But I would argue that Daniel Cormier's win was equally decisive. I wouldn't say that there was anything fluky about it. I wouldn't say there's anything, you know, quote unquote, getting caught. Like, yeah, that's part of the sport and Daniel Cormier deserves, a third fight, much like Stipe deserved a rematch for being, you know, as long a reigning champion as he was. So it makes all the sense in the world. It's the fight that needs to happen. They're going to continue to posture, but it's the fight that will ultimately be made, in my opinion.
Okay, now let's go to middleweight. Adesanya wants to fight. He's itching to get back in there. Costa's out. They're not going to wait for him. He says he wants Romero. UFC doesn't want Romero. They feel like he's lost, you know, couple title fights, missed weight in a couple title fights, is coming off a loss, albeit a very close fight against Costa, and there are some people who thought he won that fight. And so they're actually pushing for, as far as what I'm told, they're pushing for Cannonier-Romero number one contender fight, and then the winner fights Israel Adesanya. And that makes sense, but the problem is you have a healthy Israel Adesanya that wants to fight and doesn't want to wait. So what do you do?
What name have you heard in the middleweight division the most over the last, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks? Because to me, I've been hearing Yoel Romero's name coming up every single time.
Okay, I thought you were going to say Darren Till, actually.
Well, no, Darren Till is one of the people who's been talking about Yoel Romero.
Right.
Israel Adesanya is talking about Yoel Romero. I don't understand the aversion to putting Yoel Romero into that fight. If it quote-unquote won't sell, then why is everybody talking about Yoel Romero? Why is everybody excited about the prospect of Yoel Romero fighting Israel Adesanya? I'm not buying the idea that because he's lost some fights, and let's be honest, He's not been completely starched in these fights. These have been back and forth affairs, slugfest that Yoel Romero has gotten into in the later part of his career. I'm all for Yoel Romero getting that opportunity. Israel Adesanya is welcoming the opportunity to slay one of the guys that was at top of the middleweight division for so long. It makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. And I know there's a meritocracy and I know, you know, he shouldn't be getting a title shot coming off a loss, but Paulo Costa is out. He is out and Yoel Romero isn't. I think it's the fight to make.
And I also think if you have a champion that is saying, I want this guy, unless it's like a totally crazy thing, I feel like you should just honor it.
Yeah, I feel like the best thing that could happen is John Jones finally saying, I want this person, because then it would put everything to bed. Israel Adesanya is saying, I want this person. It seems like the right time to give it to him. There really doesn't seem to be a better option.
Now, I really like, if they go with Jared Cannonier, you can make a case that he deserves it more than Romero,
sure,
if only because he's on a streak and looked good in his last fight against Jack Hermanson and has looked good since moving down to 185. But again, if you want to have a champion who's like a fighting champion, and this has been a problem in the UFC, and here's your champion saying, I'm ready to return, and oh, by the way, let me fight this guy who historically people run away from, then just do it. And like, that's... You can use that as a selling point. Forget about the fact that he's coming off a loss. You build it around the fact that Israel Adesanya looked around and said, that's the toughest guy. I want to take that guy out.
Yeah, it's almost like we just did that with a BMF thing in New York City.
That's right. That's right. Okay, let's go to another one now. Let's go to strawweight. So spoke to Rose, emotional, but she's ready to return. She has regained the love and passion for the sport. Now, I was wondering and waiting for her to say, I've regained it and I want my title back.
Yeah.
But she didn't say that. And I actually found that to be refreshing. She just wants to get back in there and maybe doesn't love the experience of being champion or maybe isn't quite ready to, you know, to take that mantle or whatever the case may be. But I found that to be rather refreshing. So that opens the door. Now, I know the UFC has actually talked about doing that fight, but I don't feel like it's going to happen for a couple of reasons. I don't think she's too keen on it, and it has nothing to do with Zhang Weili. I just don't really think she wants to jump back into a title fight. Also worth noting that she's managed by Brian Butler, so he has both clients, and maybe that might be a little awkward. But I do think it opens the door for Zhang versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. A, what did you make of Rose not campaigning for that? And B, who do you want to see Zhang defend the title against first?
Yeah, I understand Rose not campaigning for that. From just the reasoning she gave and her discussion of her journey and dealing with the loss and having to refine her love of martial arts, I don't think she's particularly interested in the title being the thing that weighs on her. It's funny that Rose was on the same show as Tyron Woodley. I think they're very similar in this regard, that they seemed absolutely miserable as title holders and absolutely elated to not be title holders anymore. Not that they weren't as amazing as they were as champions, not that they weren't the best in the sport at the time, not that there was any reason that they shouldn't be champion, that they're weak, that whatever it is, but that pressure just, it seemed to weigh on them, and they're supremely happy now. Now, do I think that both of them will eventually want to climb the mountaintop back and regain that title? Yes, but it's funny to see how different the personality is when you're having to kind of chase it versus the pressures of being the champion. And both of them are examples that kind of stand out in my mind as not necessarily people that say, I need to get the title back in one fell swoop. But I imagine we'll take the opportunity if the money is right and the opportunity is right. Anyway, returning to Rose. I do think that Rose will not, you know, fight for the title immediately next. I'd like to see her potentially against Jessica Andrade. I would love to see that rematch done. I think there's a lot of people there that felt a little bit unsatisfied with the ending there, as dominant as it was by Jessica Andrade. It seemed like Rose was getting the better of the first round. And as far as Zhang Weili, it's a tough one. The fight I really want to see is Tatiana Suarez, but she's still obviously on the shelf. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't mind seeing the Joanna fight. I think that's probably the next move.
Now, could we talk about me getting The Rock on my show Monday? I mean, shooting my shot, the tweet, the most electrifying man in sports and entertainment. I mean, maybe the most powerful man in Hollywood, certainly the highest paid, former, you know, WWE superstar, now turned into a mogul in the world of entertainment, you know, maybe the most famous actor in the world. Just like sending him a tweet and him not only just saying like, oh yeah, I'll do your show someday, but actually picking the day and being a man of his word. I mean, like for the show, I mean, that was a big deal, right? Would you not agree?
I do have to admit that I missed that interview.
What?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't aware
Lies.
That The Rock was even actually coming on. So I sat that one out. Oh. No. Okay. In all seriousness, if you recall, and hopefully somebody can go back to the archives, maybe Jedi Goodman or somebody on Twitter can go back to the archives and dig this up. At the end of every year, when we were doing the MMA Hour,
yes,
we would ask who the guest that was most desired for each of us was for the following year, for the coming year. And I would say 2 and possibly 3 years in a row, my answer was always The Rock. My answer was always The Rock. And finally, when I've handed the keys over to that buffoon, Jake, it finally happens. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit bittersweet. But it was fantastic to see, and I thought you guys had a really great conversation. Obviously, the stuff that you touched on at the end about mental health and balancing such a stressful and hectic life the way The Rock does, I think applies to so many MMA fighters, and I think you're kind of seeing that on social media with how many of them are talking about dealing with that kind of pressure and that kind of stress and the things that he deals with. Not dissimilar to what I was talking about just a few moments ago with Tyron Woodley and Rose Namajunas. That pressure of being at the top of that sport is overwhelming and you know, never ending. And I imagine The Rock's grind is very similar, as he eloquently stated.
By the way, who did I mention every year as most desired guest?
Lorenzo Fertitta.
Yeah.
Did
Which
you
will
say,
never happen.
Yeah. Did you say Dana White, or was that one of
no,
that
I don't
we maybe
so.
Like kick around?
No. Who's the obvious one?
Gina Carano. the
and
one
and still till this yeah. day still to this day. And is there ever a better time than now? She's part of Mandalorian Disney Plus. still like the corporate synergy here is so incredible, and I still can't get it done. It's amazing.
I think you need to send her a screenshot of having signed up for Disney Plus and watching the Mandalorian. And let her know you're a big fan.
She's playing hard to get. Now, at this point, it's almost insulting that I can't get this done.
Gina, please, for Ariel's sake, let's make this happen this year.
Okay.
I mean, as she's doing a promotional tour for The Mandalorian, we have to make this happen.
She's talking to ESPN like she did a great sit-down with ESPN, and I'm nowhere to be found.
It will come.
Unbelievable.
You have built it. It will come.
Now, before we go, TST, this is his time to shine. He always gives us the review of the week. So you can – I know you don't listen to the show because historically you've never actually supported or listened to anything that I did that didn't involve you. So this is your first time hearing it probably. TST, what is our review of the week?
All right. So our review here comes from Buck Blue.
And what is this? Is this Israeli music?
It's Brazilian, apparently.
Oh, yeah, because they're going to Brazil.
Sounds a little like island, like Hawaii.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just came up as Brazilian. But anyway, okay. So Buck Blue gives us a 5-star review titled UFC 242 Integrity. He says, big fan of Jorge Masvidal. Much love to the BMF. All due respect, be the change, my brother. Don't become the establishment. Pay it forward. Or rather, backward, 209. He pushed to you, homie. Think about it. Be about it.
Wow.
Great content. Love the show. Thank you, guys. What does that mean? I have no idea what that review just meant.
He's saying, you know, the guy gave you the opportunity. He gave you the shot. Now it's your opportunity to now give him the shot. And I think he's referring to Nate as opposed to Nick. But I think he's saying that, you know, don't be that guy who now gets all this fame and fortune and all of a sudden is like, yeah, I'm looking for the money fight. No. You know. Pay it backwards, so to speak.
Now, did he say UFC 242?
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he did say 242.
Yeah, see, that botches the whole thing.
Hmm. I don't know how credible Buck Blue is.
Yeah, Buck Blue. Get it together, bro.
By the way, funny story about Brazilian music. When we were picking the music for the Monday show, the theme, I was looking through the ESPN library, and the song is actually that I ended up picking. The song is actually from the 2012 World Cup in Brazil. Which one was in Brazil? 2012. In any event, so it is a Brazilian type. So you could have used that song, TST.
Well, I don't know. I don't really communicate much with corporate Jake.
No, I picked it.
Good.
I picked it.
You're in a better spot.
Wait, when was it? Was it 2000? No, 2016.
I think it was 16.
Yeah. 2012 was Japan, right?
Sure.
Anyone?
I don't know. I'm not a soccer guy.
No, everyone. Wasn't that China? Before that was London, right? Isn't that right?
We're talking Olympics.
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Beijing was 08.
We're talking about
London
World Cup.
London was 2012 and Rio was 2016, right? Because there were, you know, mosquitoes.
That's
right. That's right. Now, another fun thing that we learned actually last week near Crick is that, oh, by the way, it was 2014 World Cup.
There you go.
TST.
Yeah, see, the 2016 threw me off. I was on an Olympic cycle.
Okay, yeah. So it was 2014. Anyway, that's where the song's from. So last week, got some breaking news regarding TST. We have learned that he is a minimalist. Okay, this is a real thing. He eats on the ground. He doesn't own any furniture, screenless Saturday. So each and every week, we are going to get the TST minimalist tip of the week.
TST's tip of the day.
Yeah. How about that?
Wow.
All right. So here's my tip. Okay. So if you're ever feeling any discontent in your life, I recommend that you try minimalism. And how do you do that? And let me tell you this. You say you eat on the floor. Okay. Minimalism is not just this life where you don't ever turn the power on and you just sit by a candlelight sitting on the floor. That's not what this is. It is not extreme like that. It's very simple. So the first thing that I would recommend anyone do is that you just have to start asking yourself more questions when it comes to the things in your life. More broadly speaking, the things, the people, the activities in your life that don't necessarily add to your life. And the main question that you need to ask yourself, first starting with your stuff, your physical belongings, is, does this add value to my life? Does this make me better? Does this bring me joy, happiness? Does this make me a better person? And if the answer to that question, honestly, is no, then you have to get rid of it.
What do you make of this, New York Rick?
I feel like this was stolen from Marie Kondo. Like, isn't that her thing? If it brings you joy,
Look, I've not stolen from her. She stole from the people that I'm stealing from.
Okay.
Who is that? I've never heard of that person.
She has like this Netflix show. She talks about minimalism. She tries to like make it very glamorous and just sell things. She does minimalism the wrong way. It's not genuine.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
I didn't know I opened a can of worms there.
Yeah. No, this minimalism, this is very spiritual in nature. Hers is very like commercial in nature.
Okay.
Yeah.
I respect the minimalist approach. And you know what? I like TST so much more than Jake. That's all I can take away. Like, listen to the brain power. Listen to how much he's got going on up there. Whereas that guy on Monday, I mean, I don't even know.
Well, that was fun. TST, thank you for that. I'm now starting to evaluate my life as we speak. It's a great tip. But by the way, I feel like we need to update that little thing that you... And who did that for you? Who did that whole little jingle?
Oh, my people.
Your people. But he said tip of the day. We don't do the show every day.
Tip of the day. I mean, it's, you know, when
and,
we
and
do
by the way, he didn't say minimalist. He's got to say, I want to hear that guy, whoever that guy is. I want to hear him say
minimalist
the
tip of the day?
Yeah. No, tip of the week.
Minimalist tip of the week.
Unless you're asking me to do this daily, this show daily. Is that what you're asking me in a subtle way?
I don't think the people want that.
I don't think you can handle that. How about that?
Oh, wow. Calling me out.
Yes, I am.
Oh, my gosh.
Calling you out. But no, great job as always. Thank you very much. New York Rick, well done.
Goodbye, my friend.
Is this the last time we speak for 6 months?
Yeah. I mean, let's not do this again for a little while so that the next time we can have such a glowing review. I was very touched.
All right. There he goes. New York Rick. Follow him on social media. Actually, don't follow him on social media. Follow at ESPN MMA on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those places and more. And thank you very much to Chael P for joining us. This is one of my favorite episodes of this particular endeavor that we do on Wednesdays. You know, let our hair down. Reconnect, revisit, rekindle friendships. It was beautiful. There's always so many things to talk about in the world of MMA, but sometimes you just need to talk to your old friends. And that's what we did this week. And so I enjoyed it very much. Anyway, thanks to all of you for listening. Continue to rate, subscribe, review, then unsubscribe, and then resubscribe again. I heard that works. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.